Welcome to the Cabin Culture Podcast, where we spend a little more time diving deeper into all the fun parts of cabin culture. We like to think of this as both the material and imagined expressions of how cabin lovers, dwellers, builders, and designers wish to live a more simple and authentic life. On this episode, we're talking to Brooke, the owner and host behind the two Colorado cabins that together make up DB Dens. I also feel like I should tell you right now that Sean is in the background absolutely rocking out to old school rock and roll, and I kind of hope that you all can hear him. On this episode, we talk about burrow racing, hosting in remote locations, competing against hotels, guest experience, host communities, and hosting karma. Plus, we hit on some hot topics at the end so that you can benefit from all the things that Brooke has learned in her hosting journey. Let's do this.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm pretty sure only one of my AirPods is working, but that shouldn't matter for you, right?
No, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. My dog.
Can you hear me only out of one ear?
Yeah. But I can hear you fine.
Okay.
My puppy chewed one of the AirPods, so.
Is that Rocky? Wait, hold on. I have this in my notes.
Oh.
It is Rowdy. I love Rowdy. That name.
Rowdy and I have two, Poppy and Rowdy.
Yes, I love this. We also just rescued a puppy. We were fostering her and then ended up keeping her. So we are unexpectedly, as you were, living the puppy life now, which I would not have signed up for.
Yeah.
If you had asked me.
Yeah, it's no joke. It's
no.
A lot.
And you went from zero dogs to two.
Yep.
And one being a puppy very quickly.
Yeah. So it was actually a year ago. Literally, I think tomorrow, we knew we wanted to get another dog, but we didn't want a puppy. We were looking at retired breeding dogs. We found Poppy. We like fell in love with her, just her color. I don't know. It just felt right. So we flew to California to get her, drove her home, and then a week later took her to get spayed. And they called us during her appointment and they were like, we can't spay her because she's pregnant. Like very, very pregnant.
Okay. This is interesting to me because she was a retired breeding dog. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't you think that the owners who had her would know if she was pregnant and want her last litter?
Totally. And we still can't decide what we think. I genuinely don't think they knew, but I think it's like not right that they didn't know. She had only had one litter. And she had it not that long ago. So, or not that long before we got her. I mean, I can't think of how long, maybe 6 months or something. So when we got her, she kind of had some weight on her, but we were like, oh, it's just mama weight, you know, she's still just losing the pounds.
Right.
But when we called the breeders to tell them, they acted shocked. And I mean, they're beautiful puppies. So they're, you know, they're lost.
Right. They're purebred, aren't they? Yeah. That's why I'm wondering, like, wouldn't they want them?
Oh, yeah.
Or be like, hey, we could have sold them. Like, totally. I don't know a lot about breeding, but.
I don't either until all of this. But I think they were just like, I think her son, like their son was getting married on their property like that next week. I think they were just busy, overwhelmed. Like, do I think it's a little neglectful? Yeah. But again, I'm so happy for Poppy that she didn't have, you know, I'm happy how it worked for her because I think she's was in a much more, you know, loving, she got all the attention in the world. Yeah. So I think it was all meant to be.
And didn't you say that now all of her puppies were adopted by your family and friends?
Yep.
So you could like see them all the time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. One, they're all here in Colorado except my brother who lives in San Diego. Took one.
But he got one too. How fun.
I know. It was cool.
But crazy. Yes. Unexpected.
Yes.
I would love to start this interview at the most important place.
Okay.
I don't know if you can guess what this is, but.
Oh, burrow days.
Yes.
Well, did you see I wore the necklace? Could you see it?
Oh, I couldn't see it. It's out of screen. Okay. No.
Is that better?
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
I wore my burrow.
I am obsessed.
Yeah.
Tell the people, I have read about this a while ago and have been obsessed with it for years.
Yeah.
But for people who don't know, can you please tell them about burrow days?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. So I am a native Coloradan and I did not know about burrow days until I knew about burrow days.
And life was never the same.
Never the same. even when I got my rentals, I didn't necessarily know about it. But Burrow Days happens in Fairplay, Colorado, which is where my cabins are. Fairplay overall is a really small mountain town in Colorado. Like, I would say most people outside of Colorado probably haven't heard of Fairplay. You know, it's pretty close to Breckenridge, fairly close to Vail, some of the bigger named ones, but a very small little mountain town. And they have an event every year called Burrow Days. And like the history on it is, I think it was like 1940s or something. I don't know who, but someone like put out the challenge to the people of who wants to race their burro across this pass in Colorado, basically like from Leadville to Fairplay, which was, I think, 15 miles with a burro by your side. And
by your side, I feel like that's an important note. You are not riding it. So it is a running race.
Yes.
While also with the donkey or a burro.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't know. I don't know how many contestants the first year. I mean, not many, maybe like 12. But then it was like for a $500 cash prize. And it happened. It took off and it's happened ever since. I think, you know, the course has changed a little bit. So now it starts in Fairplay. And there's two different courses. There's like a short course and a long course. So the short course is 15 miles, which is like not short.
Not short.
And you're in Fairplay, like elevation is 11,000.
Yes, something. No joke.
No. The long course is almost 30 miles and it's over, it's called Mosquito Pass. And I think you gain like 4,000 feet in elevation. So it's crazy. Like it's crazy. It's so bizarre, unique, and amazing. I went for the first time last year, which was a bit of a sacrifice from like a business perspective because huge, you know, nightly rate revenue. Like that outside of Christmas is like my biggest weekend. But I wanted to go, you know.
I love that so much.
I'm like, I want to experience this for myself.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to tell like future guests, you know, about it. So we went, my little family, my parents, my brother and sister-in-law, the cousins, and we had so much fun. I mean, the town lights up. Like I say Fairplay is small, but I say it's like small and mighty. I mean, just the people, the businesses that are there, the restaurants, they're just, they're very proud. They are successful. And like this weekend, it shined. And it's a whole weekend gig. So the actual race is on Sunday, but there's vendors, there's like music, there's like all the things you could think of. But then come Sunday, you line the like main street in town. People have their, you know, their chairs, they have like to-go cocktails. And you just watch this race. I mean, you only see them for like 5 seconds, we didn't stay till the end of the race because I have little kids and it started raining.
Oh.
But
yeah, I have questions about the end. I just feel like I'm the kind of person who watches like the Ironman competitions on TV and just cry the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
You're like watching people overcome like hard things.
God, I know.
And this race feels like the ending would be like what they look like at the beginning and what they come in looking like at the end. They've lived like a whole life out there on the trail.
And the burro. I'd probably be crying like more for the burro. Just like, good job, buddy.
So if anyone's interested in this, the book that I read was called Running with Sherman by Christopher McDougall.
Okay.
And it's a runner. So he's like an avid runner. Okay. And I think this is like a fun challenge for runners. It's like, okay, you've done marathons, you've done half marathons. And that's why I think people push towards ultras because it's like, what's the next big challenge I can do?
Yeah.
But this one is like, okay, maybe it's shorter than a marathon or slightly longer, but it's with a donkey.
Totally.
Like it just adds this whole element of craziness to it.
Well, it's not just about you. It's like you and the burro. And I don't know, you had asked me like, how do you find a burro? I still don't know. I guess people have them or reach out to people about it. I'm not totally sure about that, but
I will report back.
Okay.
I have been looking into my town's regulations about whether or not I can have one in my backyard.
Really?
So that I can train with it. Well, I mean, but I think I came to the conclusion, we travel a lot. So I think I came to the conclusion, or maybe my husband did, that the right answer for us probably isn't to adopt one, but it's more to find one locally that I could go pick up and run from there and train. But then you have to ship them out to, so you have to get a trailer to drive them out there. So another follow-up question for you would be, do you have like a burrow stand that you could like tie them to if your guests bring a burrow?
I mean, we will create one. It will.
Okay. We obviously I'll be staying at your place.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, we're on like 2 acres at each place, so we could figure it out. Yeah.
I love this.
I think it's okay, your
that's
time.
A good transition.
Yeah.
It is. I know. There's a lot of logistics in the way, but I'm interested. And one of my best friends is literally running an ultra marathon this weekend.
Oh my gosh.
So my thought is that I can convince her to also train with me.
There you go.
And then we could each get burros and go. Cause it just, she wants me to do ultras and I'm like, I'm a runner, but I run like 5 and 10 Ks.
Yeah.
Like I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And she's like, you can do it. And I'm like, but do I want to? But I think if there was a donkey involved or a burro, I think I could be convinced.
Yes. I love it. I love it. I know a place you can stay.
Thank you. I will definitely be taking you up on that. Okay. So you mentioned you're on 2 acres and I just watched the YouTube video that for folks listening, it's in your Instagram profile and it's some YouTubers. I think the Endless Adventurers maybe is what they're called.
Uh-huh.
And they stayed at your place and I was watching it. And what I loved most about this video was that I feel like location is the one thing that we don't do a good job of marketing, not intentionally, but just on our Instagrams or Airbnb profiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to give people a sense of place, not like even the town that you're in, but like an actual sense of when I pull up to the cabin, what does it feel like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they did such a good job at the beginning of showing what it feels like to pull up to your cabin.
Totally.
I'm not going to ruin it. Can you describe it to people though? Because it wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah. Well, so I have two and they're different feels. So they're both generally in Fair Play. The video you saw was my one, it's a little outside of Fair Play and it's an area called Como. And that area in particular, it's like very rural feeling. Like you're in the Colorado Rockies, but like when you turn off the highway to go into Elk Creek Den, which is this cabin, it just feels more rural country with the mountains. I mean, while you're driving in, it's one of the things that attracted us because I initially was like, this is so off the beaten path. Like, this is really rural. It takes 35 minutes to get to a grocery store. Is it too far-fetched? But then driving in, exactly that, like you're seeing the free-range cows, you're seeing antelope, you're seeing, I don't know, it's just majestic. And like, my husband always gets this feel when we turn in there. It's like you just immediately kind of feel relaxed and you're out of, you know, out of city life and all of that. And so that property, when you pull in, the cabin sits on 2 acres. It's very open. The difference between the two, Elk Creek Den and the video you saw it, while it's on 2 acres, you can see our neighbors, on both sides. When the trees are in bloom, it's a little more private, but that feels a tad different. Our other one is true, like cabin in the woods. You know, you pull into a circle driveway, trees everywhere. You really can't see the neighbors at all. So a little different feel, but,
that's what like caught my attention. I think is that coming from the East Coast, most of the cabins that I've seen or stayed at, it's like you expect to drive into trees and it's a cabin in the woods. And then when I went to stay at Teton View Cabin in March, I was like, it is so open.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind that you could see the neighbors because it almost felt like part of the geography and like culture of that area was this openness that creates like a very different emotional feel.
Totally.
And yours has that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's cool about that one too is there's a lot of ranches in the neighborhood or in the area, which comes with like free range cows. And so we get like cows just roaming our property a lot, which I love. A lot of the locals and the people that live there hate it because cows on your field and over the septic system can be like really bad. So I've been told I need to make a fence, but you get cows, you get deer, like it is, you're just sitting there inside and you're like, what am I going to see next? And the sunsets there because it's more open. The sunsets are like gorgeous there. So I love it too.
But that's what was interesting when I watched that they actually did a good job of showing. They had like drone footage of showing how long the road was and how removed it was.
Mm-hmm.
So my question for you, because you're not the only one I'm sure who's building or has built a cabin in a really remote location. Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges that you face in renting it? Like, you mm-hmm. all love it. And mm-hmm. when you pick a piece of land, you know what you're in for. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But I think a lot of folks, when then sharing it with others, it's like a lot of education, mm-hmm. a lot of communication. How do you handle that? What are some of the things that pop up from the hosting side because mm-hmm. of that?
Yeah, I definitely market or try to market towards like, this is your escape to like do nothing. You know, this is the place to come to retreat, to, you know, hunker down, to rest, rejuvenate. Yes, you're in the Colorado mountains. And if you want to adventure and if you want to drive, like there's plenty to do. But I've really tried to make the places that if someone comes and don't want to leave, like they're set up for that. So, you know, the one you're talking about, it has a tad less occupancy than my other one, just because it is, you know, it's really out there. But I make sure in my listing to, you know, I'm like, you are 30 minutes from the nearest grocery store. You're really 30, 35 minutes to anywhere. So you know, you need to come prepared for that. You need to have your groceries. There was like a time I was trying to do fill the fridge, things like that. And then I quickly learned yeah. with remote hosting and all the logistics, it just wasn't realistic. But yeah, I really just try to make sure people have a solid understanding of like the distance to things, what they need to have, and just understanding that like you're really out there, and it's for some people, you know, but you're not in the place to walk to the coffee shop or close drive to the restaurant. This is like true, really, really out there. But so many people yeah. love it, you know, it's just, yeah. it has to be the right fit.
And I feel like that is what a lot of people are looking for when they're looking to stay at cabins mm-hmm. is the escape. Totally. It's not to go someplace where I'm going to be in a big city, exactly. obviously.
Yeah.
The idea is I'm going for the cabin. And you have done a really good job with using marketing tools. And as far as I know, you're totally self-taught. You have just taught yourself, okay, if this isn't right in the middle of a big booming tourist area, mm-hmm. how do I spread the word about what we've created and what's here? How did you approach that? And like, did you know immediately that was going to be important, or did you figure that out after you launched it?
A little of both. You know, I knew, again, it's like I'm from Colorado, so I knew where I was going, and I knew it was more off the beaten path versus, you know, getting a place in one of the more like known spots, Breckenridge, Vail. But I was very intentional about that. You know, I wanted to the highway to get to Vail or Aspen, it's called I-70, and it's like such a shit show. Like traffic is horrendous, and I hate that highway. So part of it was like the highway going up to my cabins. What prompted it all was my husband and I started a tradition before we had kids where we went and cut down our Christmas tree in the area where my cabins are. Mm. So we started driving 285 all the time, which is where you hit, you know, all these little towns, Bailey and all these places. You've had some other hosts on the podcast that have cabins along there. And we just like, we fell in love with it. We loved the drive. We loved the little towns. So I intentionally knew that, you know, was the direction I wanted to head. And then, yeah, through, you know, obviously through like AirDNA and research, like I had to make sure that is this going to be successful and is it going to work here?
Right.
So definitely some proactiveness, but then after getting the cabins, yeah, just trying to make it through Instagram and through my listing and things like that. Like this is the place to come, and Fairplay is awesome. And, you know, it's so much less touristy. There's so much more small town charm. So in terms of, yeah, marketing my places and marketing the town and like why you should come here over mm-hmm. other places, I think that's just come along the way since I've had them.
Yeah. What were some of the first things that you learned? I just think it's fascinating when people have no experience in marketing. And then that's the beauty I actually think of like Airbnb, is that it takes ordinary people who might never have considered themselves entrepreneurs. I'm not saying this is you. I'm just saying anybody who doesn't consider themselves an entrepreneur or a business owner. Mm-hmm. Then it's just this desire to build their own place, or like all of a sudden turns yeah. them into a business owner and you just have to figure it out with some support. And that, again, is the beauty of Airbnb, is that a lot of the like logistical realities, like accounting and things like that, they do a lot of that for you, which I love as a business owner who has to do that at my other business. So what were some of the first things that you learned when you suddenly like took on this role?
I think like a strength of mine in any area, I'm a researcher. So when I like want to learn something, I go down the rabbit hole. And that's what I did, because I, you know, before this, I was in education and an entirely different field. I was a director in, by the time I left my old job, I was a director, which led to more business aspects, you know, financials and things like that, but still just very different. So getting into this world.
Except one note, teaching is the hardest job in the world.
100%.
And you taught special ed.
Yes.
So I feel like there is absolutely nothing that a special ed teacher can't do.
Totally.
And so I feel like that's worth noting for anyone who isn't in the classroom or no special
100%.
Ed teachers. 100%. Truly superheroes.
Yes. Couldn't agree more. And so much of like what I learned from my old job has really carried over, to be honest. But anyway, researcher. So yeah, I was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to learn everything I can. So I really, from the beginning, I invested a lot, like financially, time. Like I took a course. I pretty soon after joined like a hosting mentorship group. You know, so I knew I like couldn't do it on my own and I knew I had to learn from others. And I just dug deep into that pretty quickly. And I've just continued, you know, through either, just learning from others, like whatever that looks like, whether that's like formally listening to podcasts, chatting with people, you know, True Blue courses, that's just kind of been what I've done. And, has been successful.
Which is really interesting because I feel like when I first started my first Airbnb, it was like 2014, 2015, and there was like no community. Yeah. And even in Boone, my first cabin, it was like I didn't know any other hosts. And it almost felt like, do you get to know other hosts? Mm-hmm. Because are they competition? Mm-hmm. Like, is this something that would be helpful? And it seems like from what I know about you, you did not feel or experience that. You just dove into, did you build your own community? Did you find a community that was there? And how did you get over that mindset of like, you're also my competition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like love talking about this and I'm so passionate. I think it carried over a bit from my old job. The reason I loved my old job and miss it still was that collaboration piece. So obviously when you're working with kids with special needs, it's emotional. It's a lot of emotional energy. It's hard. And so you have to rely on the people you work with. And the school I was at was very special. And, you know, some of the people that started the school just honed in on that from the beginning of like, use each other, use each other's strengths, use each other's skill set. One of the like philosophies was leave your ego at the door. And that resonated with me so much. And it continues to, because it's like, if you're able to like leave your ego, you get to experience and learn so much. So bringing that over to the hosting world, I was really scared, honestly, when I resigned, I was really scared to lose that piece. I had no idea what it was going to look like in this world. And then, you know, I would say at the beginning, like my first 6 months or so, I did feel that loss a little bit. I felt a little bit on an island. But then so two things just kind of naturally happened. I joined that mentorship group. And through that, you know, immediately through the Facebook group and through like the Zoom calls and things like that, gained new hosting friends. I actually ended up going to a conference with people from this group. And two of them, I met at the airport for the very first time. And we sat on the plane together and then hung out like the whole weekend. And, you know, they became good friends of mine. So that was awesome. And then through Instagram, it kind of organically started and then has just become something bigger. So obviously you get to know like hosts in your area. I mean, anyone does. You're scoping, you're looking like, who is my competition? But I just found, you know, these hosts were super friendly. There's one in particular. I want to shout her out. Her name is Jamie from Chestnut Hill. She has a couple places in Breckenridge, just started a new one in Florida. And she is a leader and an inspiration in terms of cultivating community and really just being the biggest cheerleader. And I feel like she did that for this hosting community, particularly in these mountain towns I'm at. So she started an Instagram group, an Instagram chat with, there's probably like 18 to 20 of us in it. And it's all hosts in my area, like Park County, Fairplay, and then hosts in Summit County, which is like Breckenridge and Keystone and closer to Vail. And we have this chat and we talk like daily, and it's anything from, I need a plumber ASAP and my guy isn't responding. Like, do you guys have someone to send? And five numbers are sent immediately. Yep. Or, you know, how would you guys respond to this message from this Airbnb guest? Anything, yep. You know, and our most recent thing was, or like people will literally be like, I just posted a reel. It's doing terribly. Will you guys please comment on it and share it and send it to people, like, to help the algorithm? And we're like, sure. We actually just, I think it was like last week or 2 weeks ago, we created a collaborative reel, and it was most of us in this group. And it was that trend. I'm sure you've seen it. It's like, I'm from Colorado. Of course I blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know if you've mm-hmm. seen those, but mm-hmm. we created one, yeah. and it was like, we're Colorado vacation rental hosts. Of course we, you know, fill in the blank. And each of us filmed yeah. a different segment of it and just had a ton of fun creating it, laughed. I'm not sure how well it did, but it was great. And I
if just, it was fun, then it did great.
Exactly. But I think it's just, it's like, yeah, when you can not view them as competition and view them as a strength, you know, I feel like everyone in that group has different strengths and different assets, you know, and if you're willing to open yourself to learning, like some people are doing better on Instagram, some people are way more business savvy, and, you know, some people have their systems better. And I feel like the more and more we chat, the more people are sharing. And again, if like you can leave your ego at the door, it could potentially help you become a better host, because you're learning things that aren't your strength, and like that's okay, you know. Yes. So I'm.
Can I ask a question about this?
Sure.
Because I feel like I am so on board with this, and when I have been in Airbnb groups or Instagram groups, mm-hmm. I will say this, there's definitely a different energy. Mm-hmm. The energy in Instagram groups is more like, let's be friends, let's help each other, mm-hmm. very collaborative. The energy in Facebook groups tends to be complaining, mm-hmm. bitching about guests, mm-hmm. venting about Airbnb, like lots of negative energy. Mm-hmm. So already I see a difference between the two. But even I was in one local Instagram group for Boone in the Blue Ridge Mountains and was in it for a while, and it had that same energy until it didn't. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it had more of that negative energy. Mm-hmm. And I left because I don't have a lot of patience for that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where it's at now. It might have recovered. I'm honestly not sure. But how have you created a culture mm-hmm. in that group? Like a positive culture mm-hmm. that is supportive and loving and helpful and doesn't, because all it takes is one person, totally. I think, to change the energy.
Yeah.
How have you all created that, and how do you maintain it?
Mm-hmm. I think, again, Jamie, who kind of started it, and a couple who are sort of like the originators, I feel you respect them so much, and you respect kind of what they've done. And again, they just are so positive, you know, like there's times that I'm like, yeah. do you have anything negative to say? But, and it's not like,
oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. Believe me, there's times, you know, my like one terrible guest experiences I've had so far, knock on wood, you know, I certainly brought it to the group and talked about it, but even like, I don't know, even the way it was responded to, it just doesn't go down that rabbit hole of getting dark yes. and dreary, you know, the way people even respond to negative situations, just, it's just at that line where it's like, sure, we can vent, but this is positive, and we're just not going to go that direction. And again, I think it's a little yes. bit from the people that kind of started it. And, you know, and Jamie talks about a lot, like she, the reason she's done, been very successful on Instagram and kind of grown, you know, she has like over, I don't know, she's at like 12,000 followers or something. And she's done it really organically. And like a big thing she talks about is just like what you put into others and like what you put into other people's account and the energy you give, it's going to come back to you. Like, and that's what she's experienced firsthand.
So it sounds like it starts from the top. And so who creates a group and who like manages a group is a really big, and honestly, the one that I left, it was because of actions from the person who had created the group.
Yeah.
So it does feel like maybe that was the problem, which is a bummer, right? Because there's like a whole group of people who then are excited to find this and then it falls apart and it's like, well, can you create another one or what does that happen? But I'm guessing I'm not the only one who's experienced something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Who craves the community, but then the community actually does the opposite if it just doesn't end up feeling good. And to your point, like negative things happen. I don't think it's an avoidance of talking about bad guests or hard experiences. It's more what you were saying, the tone of which it's responded to. I always say strategize, don't rationalize. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the turning point. Mm-hmm. Something bad happens. And are you just immediately defending yourself and like justifying why or how it happened? Mm-hmm. Or are you thinking like, what can I learn from this and what happens next?
Yeah, 100%.
Can change the energy of a group like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And and like I even experienced that again at my old job. But, you know, when I was a director, most of the teachers, we're talking like fresh out of college, young 20-somethings, really influenced. And same thing, like at the top, it was so crucial for me to like give the good energy and give the, like, this is how we do it. Like there's a time and a place to be human, but because, you know, when it came to gossip or like venting about a parent, you know, we always said something, and it's kind of like the same as guests. Like we always said at our school, like talk about parents as if they were in the room. Like, you know, when you're talking to your coworkers with them, it's okay to have feedback and have constructive feedback, but, you know, always pretend they're listening. Cause, again, at the end of the day, I think that karma then can return to you in either a positive way or a not positive way.
This makes so much sense why you're good at what you do, because I also worked in schools and was a dean of instruction. So was responsible for some of the culture. Mm-hmm. And it is so similar. And I hadn't really thought about it until just this moment, how much, in the schools I worked, it was the same way. If you got into the wrong circles of teachers, it was like, bitch, right? Mm-hmm. Like we can complain about everything, this student, this parent, this other teacher, this principal. But if you got in with the right group, it was like, okay, this hard thing happened in your classroom. Tell me about it. Okay, maybe this can help. Let's try this. Let's do this, right? And it was all like productive, like next steps. I really like what you said about talk about guests as if they're in the room, because I also feel like there's karma to that. Mm-hmm. If you assume the best of them and love on your guests, I feel like you end up with better guests.
100%.
It just like is a circle.
Yeah. And like I sometimes like feel bad, and again, knock on wood, I'm sure it's going to happen, and it's happened. I've had a couple tough guests, but like by and large, I have had such amazing guests, and I just have had not that many issues. And I think it just starts from the beginning, and I think it's just energy, kind of like we're talking about. It's like what's the energy I'm getting from your communication? Like what's the energy I'm getting from your rules? What's the energy I'm getting when I get in your house? And and I really think there's something to that of like when you create this energy and feeling, people return it in favor, and they want to respect your house and they want to respect you. And I've just been really lucky with that so far. But I truly feel a lot of that has come from my old job. Also, like I was responsible for like children at my old job. Like the stakes were high, the pressure was high. Yes. So when I've had like some tougher guests or tougher communication in this world, it just doesn't affect me as much because I was a director during COVID. It's like, you can't phase me too much after that experience, you know? So anyway, I've been lucky for sure.
I was staying at a couple Airbnbs when we traveled to New Zealand recently. And in the first one, I mean, now looking back at the whole experience, I was like the worst guest. Like I checked in and I was like, oh, where's the guest book? We're looking for a place to eat and we don't know where to eat. And they didn't have one, it turns out. But I was like, well, do you have any recommendations of places we can eat? I was just being like very needy.
Yeah.
And then on the second day, I broke a wine glass and I told them, but it was still just more messages, right? Which was probably annoying for them. And then on the third day we left and I left my favorite ring there, which was like not cheap and it came from Frankfurt. So it was like a big deal that I left it there.
Yeah.
So of course I'm messaging them about that. And I'm like, we're going to be back in Auckland. How can I get it? And Sean was like, you need to leave these people alone. You are like the neediest guest. But what it gave me was I feel like I'm good at this anyway, but like even more empathy for guests of just like the thing I think we often forget is that guests are traveling. I mean, this seems obvious, but guests are traveling when they're staying with us. And travel, you're away from home. You don't have routine. You don't have comfort. Like all of the things that you're used to are gone.
Yeah.
So naturally, you're going to be a bit needier, even if you're trying to be good, just because life is a little bit harder when you're traveling and you are relying on that host to kind of provide for you a safe space amidst otherwise chaotic, you know, travel.
Totally. Well, and like I think about when I stay at like a hotel, they're quick like with their communication. And, you know, I mean, some are better than others, but like, you know, when you stay at a good hotel, it's like you send a text message or call, like they're immediately answering and they're like at your service. And it can be hard. You know, I even have times just because of day-to-day life and my kids where I get a message and I don't always respond immediately and, you know, because of just distractions of life. But I try to be really good about that because I don't want guests tiptoeing around me or around their experience. You know, I think that's what can give a bad name to Airbnb and short-term rentals is like, you know, I don't think you should feel bad at all for all that communication in New Zealand. Like, first of all, you're in New Zealand from the States. Like that's travel times a billion. And that's like your job as host to make sure you feel like safe and secure, you know?
Yes. And that literally is our competition because the last day, the last two nights we were in Auckland, we stayed at a hotel because I was just like, we did Airbnbs and I was like, I'm just going to book this hotel. And I think it was the best two nights of the whole trip because the staff there was so attentive and so concerned with our enjoyment that it was a really good reminder exactly of what you're saying. It's like, this is what we're competing against.
Right.
And is it, do our guests have too high of an expectation if they want an immediate response? Sometimes I feel overwhelmed by that because I'm so worried about disappointing them. But as a traveler, I really needed that kind of attention.
Totally.
And is that too much to ask? Am I being needy or is that just the nature of travel? And is this the industry we're in? And I feel like that trip was a really good reorientation for me as a host of like what I want my guests to feel like when they're there. And even though I thought I was doing a good job, it made me realize the ways in which we could improve that.
Totally.
And just the understanding how guests are feeling when they're traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
You now have two properties. And so I want to go to the point where like you start, and I think this is a lot of people think about this, right? They have one cabin and they love it. And they're like, wait, is it time? Do I do a second? So talk us through that decision-making. Like where were you with the first one when you were like, it's time for a second? Was that always part of the plan?
No, no, not at all. I think, again, I'm the type of person that like when I dive into something, I dive in really deep and really strong. I, you know, I was transitioning out of my old job, which was hard. You know, we made that decision because it was just the right thing to do for our family. I wasn't necessarily, you know, you hear people like, I'm dying to get out of my 9-to-5. That wasn't necessarily me. I loved my job. But between having two kids, my husband took over his family business. It was just impossible. So something had to change, but it wasn't necessarily my goal to go from what I was doing to just stay-at-home mom. Partially because being a stay-at-home mom, as we all know, is like so hard. And I just knew for my mental health and everything, like I needed something of my own. So got the first one, like poured my heart and soul into it. And then I think just fell into kind of the, what people do of like, okay, now I want another one. And I have no regrets. Like timing wise, I think it was a lot to do because we got the first in February of 2022 and then got the second one in September 2022.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and they
were. Okay, you didn't build either of them.
No. So the first one we bought, it was a new build bought. The second one was, we bought it before it was, the build was complete. But it was, it wasn't like custom. There was a few things at the end that we customized with the builder, but by and large, you know, it was his plan. And we just did a few things at the end.
What do they call that when it's like pizza? Is it like par baked? Where it's like partially baked? Yes, and then, so it's like a par baked cabin.
A par baked cabin. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think it was just, the first was so fun. It was so successful. We just saw kind of the potential of it. And I was like, let's do it again. But, you know, it is not my goal to like have an empire. It is not my goal to like have 20 Airbnbs. Because part of what I love is like, I love hosting, you know, that's like why I'm doing this. I'm really viewing this kind of as my job and, my thing. And I want to be involved, you know, I'm remote, I'm 2 hours away, but I still go up to the cabins like at least once or twice a month. I go take Instagram footage. I go add little things. I continue adding decor. That's unnecessary, but I love that. I love decorating for the holidays. Like, I just love being involved. And, you know, the more properties you get, the more you have to delegate. And that's just not what I'm looking for. I've thought about like maybe a third, but it's not in the cards right now. I feel like I could do one more.
I feel like, but I think three, at least from my own experience, I didn't want to go to three, but I got outvoted on the third. And my one rule was I'm only going to do it if someone else hosts. And then I quickly realized that I can't do that.
Yeah.
And it's stretching me to my maximum. I don't feel like I'm doing everything well, but going to four feels impossible. Totally. Like three feels possible, but four just feels impossible.
Yeah.
Now, do you find that you have a favorite? Because this is something that I've struggled with once adding other ones, is like it's impossible not to have favorites. And Sean and I have different favorites.
Oh, really?
Do you find that you have a favorite?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Mainly because of my kids and my dogs. One of them, in my opinion, just fits everyone better. So the one you saw in video, Elk Creek Den, it's two stories. And so there's like an upstairs loft that has a bedroom, but it also has this like extra just loft space. So like we can kick the kids upstairs when we like want to have a drink and watch football. Mm-hmm. And they can go upstairs and like watch a movie. Also the property, like you saw, it's very open. So the dogs can run, the kids can run around, where the other one is just saturated with like trees and it's just, it's not as easy for like the kids to go run outside, or even the dogs necessarily. Yeah. So for that reason, just for our family, you know, prefer going to Elk Creek Den.
Favorite.
But I love both. Like when we stay at Elk Creek Den, I love it. You know, it's more like logistical.
That makes sense. For us, it's just two of us. Well, my favorite's Cozy Rock.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In case that's not obvious. Because it was like my dream cabin. Sean and I had just started dating when I bought the land for it. So like I asked his opinion on some things, but if I didn't agree with him, I was just like, no, I'm doing what I want. Because it was like, I don't know if you'll be around in 2 years. Right. Like I'm not going to make big decisions around this.
This is my baby.
And that's right. So, I mean, naturally it is like everything that I want and I just love it. And his is camp, which is further north in Maine on a lake. Okay. And it's funny that that's not my favorite because that lake is the lake that I grew up going to. My family camp is right down the road. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I love it there. And so you would think that that would be my favorite. But I think because it was the third and I was like, no, I don't want to host another one. I can't do it. I run a business full time. I was just like, no. And then I got outvoted. So it feels like it's always the one that I'm resenting.
Yeah.
Just in terms of if something comes up there, I'm like, well, I didn't even want to buy this one. And then I'm still managing the thing that came up. But whenever I'm there, I love it.
Yeah.
So it's, and then the first one, whenever I'm there, I love it. But it's just, that was my first one. And I've learned so much since then. So I feel like the other two, I've done so many things writer. That's not the right word.
No.
More right, more correct.
I like writer.
So there's more. Yeah. So there's more that annoys me about the first one because I'm just like, if only I'd done this right the first time around, you know?
Totally.
But I still love it in the area. It's just hard when you have multiple to not have favorites. So I'm always curious.
Yeah.
Okay. How do your dogs get along with the cows?
Well, I truthfully haven't brought, because I just got my dogs, well, we got Poppy a year ago, Rowdy's 10 months. I haven't brought them up much yet just because Rowdy is a true puppy and I'm like,
Rowdy?
Rowdy is rowdy, man. So they've been up, I think, like once or twice. So not too many interactions with the cows yet. But I think like from guests, I haven't had much feedback. My other property, Woody Creek, that they get moose there a lot more, which is amazing. So they're, it's usually like fall and spring when you see them the most. And I mean, I'm literally talking right. If you're like sitting in the living room, I've had guests send me videos. I've put some on my Instagram. I mean, literally on our property line, right outside the deck. And it's typically like a mom and a baby.
Oh, which is scary. That's the only time I'd be scared of a moose.
Totally.
I saw a picture on your Airbnb profile and the moose was just poking its head through the trees. And I was like, that can't be real. They didn't take that. They must have gotten it somewhere.
Oh,
that
my
is
gosh.
On your property.
I'll send you a video after this where it's like right there. But moose, like, I guess when they see dogs, they think it's a wolf. Like that's their immediate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which makes sense. Yeah. So it's like they will immediately attack because they're just completely threatened. So I do have to tell guests, like, be cautious. You know, I would not just let your dog go outside. Most of them actually will take their dogs. They don't necessarily let them go out like the back in the woods as much. A lot of guests take them out front more on the driveway where it's a little more secure. So no bad interactions so far, but I have to make sure they know.
Okay. Well, the first time that Poppy or Rowdy meets a cow, I really hope this is the content I'm waiting for on your Instagram. Instead of preventing danger, I hope you're just recording it and sharing it with all of us so that we can see it happen.
I will do my best to get that interaction.
The last 10 minutes, I want to do some hot topics, which I haven't done in a while.
Ooh, okay.
And see as a host where you stand on them.
Okay.
So let's start with cancellation policy. How strict are you and do you make exceptions?
Yeah. I've played around with my cancellation. So I've been, I always forget the different term. I've never been like the strictest, but I think I've been firm, which is like the 30-day. And then I've changed to moderate because again, like, being a family with young kids and my kids get sick like all the time. But again, I also am like, but that's on me. I need to buy the travel insurance. So sometimes I can be like too empathetic towards the guests and I have to remember like I'm running a business, like there are options for them. So I'm pretty sure I'm back to firm right now. Exceptions. I've made exceptions before. Again, I feel like karma is real. And like, if there's a situation that, I just feel this is an impossible situation. You know, a lot of times I'll encourage them. I don't know if I've ever like just lost out on a week, you know, on a stay. I think I've asked them to like reschedule for different dates. But I'll work with people. Again, it's for me, it's always finding that balance of like, this is a business and don't, you know, don't be stupid, but also really leading with that, you know, just kindness and working with people, I think can really pay off.
Yeah, it's hard. Okay, pet friendly. Before you had Poppy and Rowdy is when you had your cabin. So were they pet friendly prior to the dogs?
Yeah, they've been pet friendly from the beginning. That, you know, I've always been a dog person. We've always traveled with dogs. So I knew I was going to do that. And again, overall, it's been just fine. I really try and make the dog thing like an experience. So I have, you know, I have, I've like branded a little branded cookie jar, like treat jar with like DB Den dogs. I have like a DB Den dog. It's like a little storage bin, like on the wall with like my logo and stuff where they can put the leashes. I have like poop sacks in there and some balls. Again, I just try to make it an experience. And I feel again, where that, like what we were talking about earlier, if you kind of like, I feel like guests feel that and are excited about that and are like thankful for that. And in turn, give back that energy and like take care of your
health. Totally. What about checkout procedures? This is getting a lot of shit all over Instagram right now and TikTok and all of that. What do your checkout procedures look like?
They literally say, please check for your belongings and drive safely. That wasn't...
Did they always look like that or have
you changed? No, I changed. I think at the beginning, I don't think I ever asked a ton. I think I said, please start the dishwasher. I forget. It may be like two other things, but I even just took that away again, just with all the, you know, stuff on Instagram. And here's what I found. They do the things I would ask anyway. Like I'd say 80% of the time, 85%. Like definitely there's some guests that take total advantage and leave dishes in the sink and don't start the dishwasher. But most of my guests do the few things that I'd want them to anyway. And I've gotten at least like two or three reviews that specifically mention the checkout procedures. They say like, it was so nice not to be met with a chores list on our last night of the stay.
What about direct booking?
Yes, I have a direct
booking. Do you do direct booking? Mm-hmm. Did you do direct booking straight from the start?
Nope. I probably did it 6 to 8 months in. I think from some of the hosting groups I was in, you know, that was talked about a lot. And then I ended up hiring someone who you've talked to other hosts that have used her, but she helped create my website and direct booking page. And yeah, I'm a fan. But my bread and butter is still Airbnb. I think, I don't know my exact percentages, maybe 25% direct booking. Okay. But I'm getting more and more, you know, from Instagram who then go to the direct booking, repeat guests, some that just randomly find me. I make sure like whenever someone books direct, if I don't clearly know where they came from, like I'll always ask, like, just curious, like how you found me. So I'm a fan.
I'm going to ask some logistical questions about this one because I am considering direct booking after years of not. I am considering it. What platform do you use and how much harder has it made your life?
So I use OwnerRez, which is a total pain in the ass at the beginning. I actually had to also hire someone else to help the setup because it's so not user-friendly and it's very complex. OwnerRez does a great job. If you want to take it on, they have so many tutorials, but to me it was worth the money. Now that it's set up, I love it. I love it. I mean, it's very user-friendly once you get the hang of it. It's so clear, like, you know, your front page, I see both my properties, I see bookings, it, you know, automates all
and
the
it
messages.
Syncs with Airbnb.
Yep. I mean, sync Vrbo.
And does it automate messages through Airbnb?
Yep.
So you can just set up automated messages there and it goes to all of them.
Yep.
And can you do pricing from there too? You can control pricing across all platforms.
I use Price Labs, but you know, you can sync it with OwnerRez. There's like a renter agreement that goes out to all my guests from OwnerRez. I used to do a security deposit. I got rid of that because I got too much flack. But even guests through Airbnb, they sometimes like question me of like, why am I having to go to this third party to sign a renter agreement? And I sometimes have to explain because Airbnb does allow it. You just have to find the right verbiage that they have on their website. But OwnerRez set all that up. The other huge thing with OwnerRez I love is the reports. So there's this like report setting and you can get reports for so many things, like just with taxes that we just had to do, like taxing reports, occupancy reports, you know, direct booking versus Airbnb, like where are your bookings coming from, lead time, like endless report options, which is amazing.
Okay. Do they automatically take care of taxes or do you have to do that manually every month?
So if you do direct booking, at least in Colorado, you have to do it yourself quarterly, or there's like third party things you can hire. But yeah, I mean, Airbnb, you know, remits it. Although you still have to report from Airbnb in Colorado, you just would put like zero. But if you do direct booking, you do have to report that.
All right. The last question. Okay. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on.
Okay.
What makes a cabin a cabin?
Yeah. This is funny because I think I put in my like my pre-interview, you know, there's times I'm like, do I have a cabin? I don't know, you know, because Both of mine, especially
your place is very nice.
Thank you. Thank you. But they're not your typical, they're not a lot of the cabins I see on Instagram. They're not like all wood. They're not the stove fireplace. They're both new builds. They're both a little more modern, especially my first one, like Woody Creek has, it does have a lot of white walls. It is a little more modern. Elk Creek has a little more like wood texture going on, but there's times I'm like insecure about that. And I'm like, should I wallpaper? Should I paint? But I kind of, you know, I'm glad I haven't made those decisions and just sat with it, because I think what makes a cabin is like the experience, right? And like, what are you hoping your guests get out of this? Like my places are in the mountains. They're definitely like, you know, remote. So there's that cabin sense. But my goal when creating them was like, I'm trying to send you kind of in the middle of nowhere, but still getting this very kind of boutique, kind of modern, very comfortable stay. Because that's, you know, what I'm seeking. Like when I'm looking at places, and especially with young kids, like hotels don't make sense for us, but you know, I still want to stay somewhere that feels nice, that feels clean, that feels new. Like for a young family, that can go a lot. So I think it's all about what you're putting in, you know, what makes it you. You know, I kind of designed both places around like one piece of art. They're these kind of Southwestern prints from a Colorado artist. Yeah. So I think it's just all about bringing yourself into it. And then really what the guests are going to get out of the experience.
You mentioned that you feel insecure about it sometimes, about thinking of it as a cabin. And you're not the first person who said that. I'm curious, where do you feel like that insecurity comes from? Is it from like other people on Instagram, like guests? Is it from hosts?
No. Viewers? Right. And so that's the thing. I'm like, take the data, Brooke. Like your reviews are amazing. People love your decor. Like people love your places. So it's for sure Instagram. Like it's for sure just as I've gotten to know more hosts and, you know, see these places, you just start to be like, oh, like that is so beautiful. And I love that design. And I wish I had more of that. But then I'm like, but I don't have an A-frame. And I don't like, that's not my aesthetic. Like, that's not what I was like going for. And that's okay. Right. Like we have different styles, and that's okay. But there can just be, I think the insecurity is more just like, I don't even know if it's insecurity, but more just like, oh my gosh, I love her place and I love her place. And maybe I want to make another place that's more of that style, you know?
That's right. That's where the desire for me, that's why I have to stop consuming sometimes.
Yes.
Because it makes me be like, oh, well, I want to do that. Oh, so maybe I should have another one so I can do this better, instead of being content with what I know I enjoy about the ones that I have. And at the end of the day, like even on this podcast, it's called the Cabin Culture Podcast. But if I accidentally have someone on and someone doesn't think it's a cabin, who cares?
Totally.
I mean, right? Like it's just a term. And in my opinion, the term cabins is meant to bring people together. People who have positive nostalgic memories about cabins, or people who've just discovered cabins, or people who've built one. Like it's not meant to ever. That's why I love asking this question, because the answers are so different.
Right.
Which to me, the point that it drives home then is like, there's no right or wrong answer. Mm-hmm. You feel like it's a cabin, then it's a cabin.
Yeah, for sure.
But I like hearing from folks as to why.
For sure.
Brooke, this was great. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
I had a blast.
Me too. Thanks so much for joining us. And if you liked what you heard, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or share some of your favorite parts over on Apple Podcast. If you have feedback or suggestions for the future, you can also find me on Instagram @CozyRockCabin. Looking forward to next week.